How beautiful. Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We have been on a journey throughout the spring and the summer, exploring evolutionary transformation through the lens and the colors of a system known as spiral dynamics. And as we've been doing that, we have been looking at various historical periods of cultural evolution, from prehistoric survival all the way to postmodern era that we're in. And we have seen that as societal development has evolved, it has fashioned many different worldviews throughout history, from tribal living and warrior, feudalism and traditional rule of law, the industrial age, the egalitarian value system. And as we travel this spiral, we discover that these worldviews can also be correlated with our various stages of human development, from infancy to self-actualization. And we've discovered along the way that these individual developmental stages emerge in the very same sequence as these larger cultural worldviews have. From infancy, where our very survival depends on our caregivers, to the mature adult internal search for meaning. And if you have missed any of these earlier talks, where we looked at each of these worldviews in depth and what it means to us individually, you can access all of those on the website, unityspokane.org. Now, the really exciting part about this exploration for me is the realization that we are now on the cusp of another evolutionary paradigm shift, this time into a more holistic, integral, interconnected, world-centric way of life. The signs are all around us. You know, if you look at global communication, global travel, the internet, networking, you know, the true interdependency of life is starting to become more apparent in our culture. Would you agree?
Yeah.
And we're moving toward world-centric living. In fact, the kinds of global problems we're facing on our planet right now are calling forth this paradigm shift. I mean, do you feel it within you?
Yes.
Say it like you mean it.
Yes.
Yes. And our job is to help usher in its emergence. Are you up for it?
Yeah.
All right. So the question is, how do we do that? How do we do that? How do we help the paradigm shift? I'm feeling like a joke come on. You know, how many, you know, spiritual seekers does it take to create a paradigm shift? And I don't have the joke figured out yet, so it'll show up somewhere else. But how do you do it? How, you know, and what might be in the way of making this quantum shift? What's it going to take for us to bring forth this new paradigm of living? My talk title, as you've heard, is Survival of the Kindest, and spoiler alert, you know, that gives you a little hint that maybe love is involved in this. Could happen. You know, did you know that Charles Darwin did not coin the term survival of the fittest? He did not. In fact, he argued against it. He said this: those communities which included the greatest number of the most sympathetic members would flourish best and rear the greatest number of offspring. And what he referred to as sympathy in today's terms would be called empathy, altruism, compassion. And I believe that the very survival of our world rests on those attributes. So what can each of us do individually as we help midwife this new paradigm of living into manifestation? Well, you know, part of our evolutionary process is that as we each grow and evolve in our individual human development, we transcend and yet include the previous stage. And one way we might think of this is to imagine we're climbing a ladder. As we move up rung by rung, we include the altitude that we previously attained on an earlier rung. We don't lose that, even though we're no longer at that's not our current station. At the same time, we need to transcend the one we're currently on. We can't both stay on the same rung and move on up at the same time. And it's the same in our individual human development. We keep all the wisdom and the insight that has already emerged in our consciousness as we grow and transform, while at the same time, we go beyond it, beyond what that understanding that we previously had. Isn't that cool? Really? So just think of how in our human development we have transcended infancy, where all we know is what's in front of us with no differentiation, it's all me, into toddlerhood where we begin to crawl and then walk and explore and discover more, widening our territory, and we include the learnings from that as we develop an ego, now there's me and you, and then transcending that to social development, now there's us, and we have rules that we follow, to that emergence of critical thinking where we start to poke holes in all those rules, and then coming to the place in the search for interior meaning, which leads us all to unity. And as we continue to transcend and include the elements of the former stage, we keep the learning, we keep the widened perspective, but we also move beyond it. And as this new worldview develops, it provides additional perspectives for us to utilize. So our view widens as we move up the ladder. It doesn't mean the view at the bottom was wrong. It just means it was incomplete. And depending on where we are on this ladder of transformation, we will experience life through the lens of that worldview structure. Why? Because experience follows vision. How we see the world dictates our experience of the world. So this transcend and include aspect of our growth is absolutely imperative for our transformation. Because what happens if we don't do it? What happens if we have some kind of arrested development in our, you know, traveling up the ladder? Chances are pretty good we're going to have some unfinished business somewhere along the line. And it'll affect how difficult it is to navigate the ladder, you see, and to continue the climb. And then with arrested development comes shadow material, unconscious shadow material that will be lurking in our subconscious, and we will unwittingly project it out onto people, onto the world, onto the experience itself. Does this make sense?
Yes.
So how do we know if we have something left to work through and that there's unfinished business to attend to? How can we tell if we have failed in some way to transcend an element of our past? We haven't yet moved beyond it. And how do we know if there's something that we have not yet included, which is integration? Well, two words, attachment and aversion. If we're attached to something from the past or addicted to something from the past, we have not successfully transcended it. We can't move beyond it if we're still hanging on, do you see? Now, on the other side, if we have an aversion to something, an allergy to something, an element from an earlier stage, it's being pushed away, it's being suppressed, it's being disowned, and it hasn't been integrated. We can't integrate something we're pushing away. Do you see that? And we can find those places in moments when we are triggered, when we have our buttons pushed, right? This is not news to us. Now, one of the drawbacks or the perks, depending on your point of view, of being in ministry is that whatever we're speaking about mysteriously shows up in our life in some way. We call it the hidden curriculum. So there's this old joke among ministers when we're writing a talk about forgiveness or patience, you know, it's like, oh, great. We're going to get the opportunity to put something into practice. And this week was no exception for me to that rule of thumb. And it's a good system when you think about it. You know, we get to put into practice this theory instead of just talking about it. So I started out this week all set to write this talk, and I began by asking my heart the question, what is holding me back from moving forward in my growth and my transformation? Now, fun fact, don't ask that question. Unless you are ready to hear the answer, right? Because as soon as I asked it, I went into my heart, first of all. That's important. You don't just, you know, kind of throw it out there. You go in your heart and ask your heart to reveal that to you. And as soon as I did, I had this memory jump into my awareness, a very painful, embarrassing, I would even call it on the verge of traumatic moment from my past, a time I was publicly embarrassed for some thoughtless behavior. And I thought, oh, no, I don't want to work with that one. So you know what happens when you say that? It's definitely the one. And I was surprised at how strong the emotion was that came with that memory. This was decades ago. And I realized all those years, I'd been pushing that one away as far as I could, refusing to look at it. And so I took a breath, and I opened my heart. And I said, okay, I'm going in. I'm going in. I have to tell you how difficult that was for me, but I said, I'm going in. I'm going to look this square in the eye. I'm not going to run from it. I can trust my heart to be with me on this journey. And so I sat in that painful moment. I let the feeling rise up. And as I did, two more related memories popped up. And I said, great, a trifecta. And I saw that they were all related. You know, it was like skipping a stone across the surface of the water. They were all connected. And their commonality was this, a mistaken belief that I needed someone or something outside of myself to give me a sense of value and worth. It was a belief that there was something wrong with me. And when I got that, I have to tell you, it was a moment for me. And as I continued to stay with it, I wasn't running, I was staying. And I widened my willingness to look at it and to stay present. You see, I wasn't going. Something amazing happened. Something unexpectedly amazing happened. My heart exploded with a depth of compassionate awareness that I had never, ever experienced to that depth before. And my heart just kept growing, growing. What we're going to call that kindfulness. It kept growing wider and wider to my younger self in each of these memories. And self-compassion just rose up. It blossomed. It just grew and expanded. And then something else happened. All three painful memories were neutralized. Do you see? The pain dissolved. And I got that by walling them off all these years, I was actually keeping them alive. Buried alive, if we want to really get graphic about it. Available to be triggered, you see? Accessible sore spots, buttons ready to be pushed. As Richard Rohr puts it, pain not transformed is pain transmitted. But you know what? Not anymore. It didn't matter how many times those memories now came into my mind. Not only were my buttons not pushed, but the opposite happened. I felt nothing but gratitude, self-compassion, kindness toward myself and everyone else involved. And when I stood up from that experience, I guarantee you I was not the same person that sat down. Really. Completely shifted something inside of me. Wow. And that was through the power of the heart. I had transcended and included pain from my past, and I felt the joy of freedom and empowerment and sovereignty. And that unfinished business that had fueled the behaviors was finished. It was integrated, it was neutralized, transcended, no longer being transmitted. You know, there's an ancient Chinese saying that Gary writes about in his book, Conspiracy of the Soul. Soul's Conspiracy. Oops, I had the wrong title. And
it's okay, I haven't read it lately.
And that saying is, embrace tiger, return to mountain. And what that means, in effect, is to embrace the tiger, don't push it away, and return to that place of heart-centered compassion. And I realized after this experience, I had embraced the tiger and returned to the mountain. Wow, what a relief. I can't tell you how much this affected me. You know, the prolific author and philosopher Frederick Buechner writes extensively on the power of healing the pain of the past. And at the close of one of his presentations that he once did, a man came up to him and he said to him, "You are a good steward of your pain." And he said, you know, I never liked that word steward. It made me think of asking for money at a church. But he said, I liked it in this context, you see. And I saw that this work makes us good stewards of our pain. It's safe for us to go in and work with it, rather than ignoring it, disowning it, projecting it, transmitting it, wallowing in it, being stuck in it. We let our hearts make it safe enough to work with until we receive the gift of integration. See? Transcendence. And when we can look back at our past and see that it has all been for us, we have successfully transcended and included. And if there's anything left from the past that we can't see that way, we know there's some work for us to do. As the integral scholar Steve McIntosh puts it, the degree of our transcendence is determined by the scope of our inclusion. We get beyond it when it has been integrated. But when we try to squash it, deny it, run away from it, pretend it away, it just goes underground. And hiding an attachment or an aversion in some way keeps it safe where it will flourish. And it becomes unconscious, driven behavior. But on the contrary, making the unconscious conscious is the antidote through observation with a compassionate heart. And so the most important element in this work is self-compassionate awareness. We don't avert our eyes. We do so with a deep kindness toward ourself. And the French philosopher Simone Weil said, attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity, so give yourself that gift. And of course, the Q process is designed to help this, help bring these dynamics into conscious awareness. It makes it safe for us to use our perspective power to be aware of unhealthy patterns of behavior tied to the past in order to move that unfinished business from subjective to objective reality. You see, when something's subjective, it means I completely identify with it. I don't differentiate from it. I confuse myself with what I'm having. However, when I can successfully shift it to the objective, I can see it for what it is. And what was previously embedded in my subjective consciousness becomes objectively recognized, do you see, from an external perspective. And that aha moment of catching ourselves engaged in some kind of unconscious, ego-driven behavior, because it's all ego-driven when we're in that place, that's the moment we begin the unsticking process. By observing with kind eyes, we start to disidentify with it, no longer identifying it as me, but instead it's an it. And when we gain that ability, we can put distance between the impulse and the action. Do you see that? That's it. And we can see it objectively. We're no longer compelled to act on that impulse. We have a choice. We transcend the addiction. We include the aversion. And here's what happens. Inadequate I morphs into, there's a sense of inadequacy, it. Do you see that? Do you see the power of this? Don't discount the power of this. When I can move from thinking this is who I am to that's what that is, I put space between it to the point where I can now deal with it. And so we're at this point, we're free to stop pushing it away and projecting it out on the world. Instead, with self-compassion and tenderness, we need some tenderness here, we welcome and embrace this self that has mistakenly believed such a painful misperception. And that embrace, make no mistake, is divine love. Do you see it? Divine love in action. We align ourselves with the truth of who we are, with the presence of God within our hearts, and we express the truth of who we are. We return to mountain. Isn't that cool? And when we're being good stewards of our pain, we heal the past. My all-time favorite Course in Miracles quote says, "The holiest spot on earth is where an ancient hatred has become a present love." And that holy spot is within you. You have the power to heal your life. Do you know that about yourself?
Yes.
So what is it in your life you've become attached to or you've tried to push away and avoid? A belief that you don't belong, or that you're powerless, or that you can't do anything right, or that there's not enough, or that there's something wrong with you, or you're a victim in some way. When we can identify these as mistaken beliefs, rather than identifying them as who we are, when we have that aha moment where we see beyond the beliefs and realize this is not the truth, we are on the path of transcendence. In fact, we're paving the way. And this is the antidote to either failing to transcend something or walling it off. Either one causes us to continue dragging it through life. And so we want to learn to witness it in action with compassion and kindness. And that's how we begin to usher in this new paradigm of living. And the world needs us to do this work. Our very survival is at stake on a global level. I really believe that. The time has come. So to reflect, to recap, reflect on a triggering moment, determine if there's an attachment or an addiction or an aversion or allergy associated with it. Consider an earlier memory that may be related to it and stay present as a compassionate witness, observing with understanding and kindness. Gaze with tender eyes. Ask your heart to reveal the mistaken or the limiting belief that's fueling this, and allow compassion and gratitude and empathy to rise up, fill your heart, surround your younger self with those attributes until you feel a release. Do you see it? So turn to someone nearby you, not choose somebody you didn't come with today, introduce yourself to them, and explain to them your understanding of how to transcend or include in painful memories from your past. All right, let's all come back together. All right, let's all come back together. Oh. Okay, thank you. All right. We've just solved all the world's ills. And actually, the class that I am going to be leading, called Paradigm Climb, Resolve to Evolve, is an experiential journey through this entire process. And I want to invite all of you who are interested in pursuing this to come to that class. And you can sign up for it on this page. Please do not sign up unless you can come to all 7 classes. And if you can't, I'll run it again later on. We're going to begin, it's going to be Wednesday nights. We're going to start with an optional potluck at 5. Child care will be available starting at 6. The class will run from 6 to 8. And then there was one more thing I wanted to say about that. It's going to include the power-up process. And it can be taken for credit. That's the other thing. If anybody is interested in Unity elective credits, you can do that. So, survival of the kindest. as we become good stewards of our pain, do our own healing, find that inner world of compassion and divine love, we truly align ourselves with the infinite presence, and we open the gates of bringing peace to our planet. We are the ones, and the time is now. And so it is.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, so I have to tell a story that illustrates Dr. Jane's talk. I just have to, even if there's no time. So my best friend, Shannon, she just moved to Victoria, British Columbia. She came here a few times, and she's got a huge heart, really positive person. And so she moved to Victoria. It's a bigger city. And she told me, she was telling me the story the other day on the phone. And it was probably her second day in Victoria. She was downtown with a friend, and they went somewhere, and she thought someone was watching her purse. Well, nobody was watching her purse, so her purse disappeared. And someone stole it, obviously.
Oh my God.
And her phone and her wallet and all of her money, like she'd just taken out like, I don't know, $200, whatever. It was like a lot of money, so of course she's freaking out. And so she's thinking, oh God, where could it be? And luckily she had a tracker on her phone. And so, and her phone was in the purse, I don't know, she used somebody else's phone to track the device. And so it had probably been about 30 minutes since her purse was stolen. So she saw it moving on the screen. So she sees her purse moving around town. She's like, oh my gosh. So they're running around all over the place trying to find this purse. And so they think they're close, and then they're like, no, it moved this way. So anyway, long story short, she ends up seeing it on the screen, running down probably five blocks, and she sees a woman who looks homeless with a shopping cart. Okay? And so my friend knows her purse is in the shopping cart, knows it. And so, but she was like, okay, I'm not gonna, you know, because she's so positive and happy. And so what she did was she was like, okay, so she takes a deep breath and she just walks up to the woman and says, hi, how are you? And the woman's like, oh, I'm good. Why are you talking to me? You know? And she said, well, you know, what's your name? And I don't know. They started a little small talk, which is what Shannon does normally, so she's just a very friendly person. And so the woman kind of was like, oh, this is nice. So they kind of chit-chatted, and then I think the woman asked her how she was doing, I don't know, and my friend said, oh man, I'm so bummed. I think I lost my purse. I don't know where it is. And I've been looking all over for it, and you know, if you see it, could you let me know, or have you seen it, or you know, on and on. And the woman was like, kind of like, no, I haven't seen your purse. And she goes, oh, okay, it's fine. You know, I'm just wondering because, you know, everything that I have is in it. I just moved to Victoria. Oh man, such a bummer. You know, and I don't have much money. So she's just kind of chit-chatting with the woman. And so the woman was like, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I hope you find it. And she goes, oh, okay, well, thank you. And okay, so I cut in. I'm like, why didn't you just tackle her and get in the cart? That is what I said to her. Like, why didn't you tackle her? And of course, Jen was like, oh, because that's not what I would do. And I'm like, oh, okay, fine, whatever. So of course, I'm thinking you have to be aggressive in that situation and just take what's yours. So I learned a big lesson. So then, well, what happens next is she leaves the woman in her cart and goes back to her people. And they keep, you know, I don't know. I think everybody was like, why didn't you just take the purse?